Welcome to The Nature of Florida, the Sunshine State's only podcast dedicated to its wild and natural places and the fight to preserve them. I'm your host, Oscar Corral. I've dedicated much of my career to making films about environmental issues. Tune in each week to hear from a broad range of voices, from scientists to surfers, activists to mermaids, who are working on the front lines to save what's left of Florida's natural beauty and its wildlife. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Nature of Florida podcast. My guest today is Jim Gross. Jim Gross is the executive director of Florida Defenders of the Environment. It's a nonprofit organization founded in the late 1960s and focuses on preserving Florida's freshwater resources. And today we're going to talk about all things freshwater, but we're going to focus on the springs and on the Ocklawaha River. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, Jim, tell me, when I hear Florida Defenders of the Environment, I think of this army of people who are interested in protecting what's left of Florida's environment. But that's probably a little incorrect in my perception. So what is Florida Defenders of the Environment? What do you guys do?
Well, we're an environmental nonprofit organization, 501c3. So there's lots of those to go around all over the place, and certainly no shortage of them in the environmental field, like Florida Defenders of the Environment. That said, Florida Defenders of the Environment is the oldest Florida-born environmental nonprofit in Florida.
The whole, wow.
We incorporated back in the 1960s and late 1960s. And Marjorie Harris Carr was the kind of the initial impetus for that and the founder of the or co-founder of the organization. So
Was the construction of the reservoir dam on the Ocklawaha River a factor in founding this thing back in the 1960s?
Yes, it was.
Tell me about that.
Oscar, it was a big factor. Marjorie Harris Carr was involved in lots of environmental issues during her lifetime, but the one that really got her riled up was this notion of building the Cross Florida Barge Canal that would involve, building a dam on the Ocklawaha River. She just thought that was the most horrendous idea she had ever heard of. She had moved to Florida early on in her, when she was a young person, child, and nature was her passion from her youth all the way through her experiences in college. She had some trouble getting into college at the various places, but she, some schools weren't admitting women back in the days when she was doing her higher education. Mm-hmm. And so she had to pull some strings to get into like UF as a grad student.
Marjorie Harris Carr's legacy lives on. They just passed or approved recently in the last year or so the wildlife corridor, which wasn't that one of her inspirations early on as well? And didn't Florida Defenders of the Environment play a role in that?
Oh, yes. If you're talking about the Marjorie Harris Carr Cross Florida Greenway, basically follows the actual route of the what was planned to be the barge canal route. And the state had already bought up all the lands for the route, and so they just when the project was finally scuttled due to Florida Defenders of the Environment's litigation against the Army Corps of Engineers, those lands kind of sat there already purchased and made sense to just convert them into a greenway. And so it has the potential. It's already great for recreation as it is now, and it has the potential to be even better once the dam is out.
I have actually been to a couple of spots where you can access that trail, and it's wonderful. I wish I had more time to walk it. I walked maybe 2 or 3 miles of it, and I know that there's a lot more than that to explore.
Walking, bicycling, and paddling.
Yes. Well, let's take a step back, Jim, and let's talk about the Ocklawaha River and what happened to that body of water. I'm going to just present the problem. The Ocklawaha River is a small river on the northern rim of Ocala National Forest. And in the 1960s, the Florida government had an idea to try to cut a canal across the state of Florida, kind of like the Panama Canal, so that ships wouldn't have to circumvent the whole state and go south past the Keys. They can just cut right through Florida. And they got about maybe a tenth of the way through until they realized that it was just a horrific idea that was not going to make any economic sense. But while they were planning it, they dammed up the Ocklawaha River and flooded a bunch of forest and springs. So that's where I'm going to hand it off to you, Jim. What happened in the 60s with the Ocklawaha River?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. The history goes all the way back, even in the days when Spain owned Florida as a territory of the crown. They were looking for a way to get across Florida navigationally, because particularly the old vessels made out of wood in the olden days, it wasn't really safe going around the southern tip of Florida, because lots of ships would hit land on reefs, breach the hull and sink and lose their cargo, sometimes loaded with quite a bit of valuable material. And so they started looking for it. So the idea goes way back. Even in the early 20th century, there was a movement afoot to build this canal project as a way to expedite the movement of goods across the Florida, from the Mississippi Delta, and then going up around to the east coast of Florida, to make it faster to haul goods across east and west by doing that. So that's for about a year in the Depression, there was funding for the project, and actually they started construction on it, and we can still see some of the relics from what they did in that 1 year of funding in the area around Ocala, just south of Ocala. But they didn't get very far, and it did not get funding for a second year. The idea never actually went away. There was an argument that it was going to be needed for self-defense during World War II. And there was an incident where a cargo vessel carrying oil, I think it was torpedoed by a German U-boat off of Jacksonville Beach in sight of people on the beach. And wow. They saw it explode and into flames and sink before their very eyes. That tended to give the people who we call the canal boosters, who wanted the project built, some optimism that the project would get going. I think it was approved but never funded. At that time, and so it didn't get started then. After World War II, there was continuing lobbying for the project in the 50s and 60s, and John Kennedy, when he was campaigning for president, didn't look like he was going to win Florida. And so somebody must have told Mr. Kennedy that if you say you want to support the Cross Florida Barge Canal, you're going to get more voters. And which he did, and he came out in favor of it, and he still did win Florida. But he didn't last long as president, and he was succeeded by Lyndon Johnson, and Lyndon Johnson was a different kind of president, who was your classic big capital projects kind of president. Liked the idea, sounded good, sounded like a good way to get the support of Florida voters and that sort of thing. So that's when it really got started, under Lyndon Johnson in the early 1960s. And they had to do the planning at first, but the construction started not long thereafter. And the dam was in place by 1968.
The Rodman Dam. And the Rodman Dam blocked up the Ocklawaha River. Talk to me a little bit about the Ocklawaha River, Jim. What is the Ocklawaha River, and where does it feed to, and what happened once the dam was built?
Well, the Ocklawaha River really is a fairly large river system if you look at its entire watershed. It actually, the farthest, most distal southern point of water that feeds into that river basin comes all the way from the Green Swamp in central Florida. And it flows north through a series of lakes called the Claremont Chain of Lakes, and makes its way eventually up into the lakes, Harris Chain of Lakes in central Florida. They're west of Orlando area. Lake Apopka is one of those lakes. It doesn't come in through Lake Apopka, but it's part of that whole chain of lakes. And then on the north side of the Harris Chain of Lakes is where we begin calling it the Ocklawaha River. Same watershed, but that then the name comes in as the Ocklawaha River at that point in time. And it continues traveling north, and it meets the tributary of Silver Springs.
Silver Springs, right.
could arguably be called the real source of the Ocklawaha River, because that's where most of the water is coming from. And most reliably, and then
the Silver River that comes out of Silver Springs.
Yeah, that's right. Silver Springs is to the west, and there's a short few mile run from the spring down the Silver River to the confluence with the Ocklawaha River.
And so, what happened when the dam was built?
You know, when the dam was built, we began to see the adverse impacts of having a dam in place. Didn't take very long after the dam was in place for the dam to fill up and for the river to be closed off to species of animals that needed to go up and down the river for various purposes.
Like what kinds of species?
Well, manatees is the one is most often thought of.
So manatees were blocked from their migration route that took them from the coastal areas further inland, where there's more seagrass meadows and
well, there's the feeding, but the principal issue for blocking manatees is that manatees this far north in Florida can't survive the winter, without finding a spring to get to when it gets really cold. If it gets down to a certain temperature and the water temperature in the river gets down, you know, into the mid 60s, manatees die. Mm-hmm. They just can't take that. They're mammals. They can't take that much cold for that long without, a certain amount of mortality. And so they were able to get up. There was Silver Springs was one of the most prominent places for them to find refuge. And of course there was plenty of feeding as well. But those cold snaps in Florida are very brief. They mm-hmm. just need to get there to survive for how long it is. 2, 3, 4, 5 days, maybe a week, and then they can come back to where they normally range for grazing on seagrasses and different types of things.
So once the dam was built, the river started swelling up and flooding, overflowing its banks and creating a reservoir, and also overflowing its banks further upstream. So how many acres in total were drowned by the Ocklawaha River, by the dam construction?
You got me on numbers here. I'd have to go look that one up, but it certainly is orders of magnitude greater than the surface area of the river alone. It's just, you're comparing a line to a circle. One has area and the other has very little.
I think I've heard something like 20,000 acres.
It could be on that order. Yeah. It's huge.
And surely you'd think that the dam had some other great purpose, like creating renewable energy or some sort of energy project, right? But no, the dam did not.
Yeah, well, we build dams in this country for a variety of purposes. This particular dam was built for commercial navigation. Now we also build them for water supply, power generation, and flood control. Mm-hmm. This dam has no potential for water supply, flood control, or power generation.
Wow.
It just doesn't have any economic purpose. It wasn't built for that. Its intended purpose was something else, navigation.
So it was built for navigation. And then what happened to the project? What happened to the Cross Florida Barge project?
Well, it got shut down initially by a court order by a judge in Washington, D.C., pursuant to litigation that was brought by Florida Defenders of the Environment and its partner, whose initials are the same but reversed, the Environmental Defense Fund, mm-hmm. EDF and FDE. Mm-hmm. And we joined together and we approached them and said, hey, you want to be our partner in this? And they said, yes. And so it went before a judge up there, and judge ruled in our favor and said, this is not appropriate. And it was timely, convenient for how things went through in chronological order, because we had just gotten a law on the books that required any projects that were built with federal dollars, they had to have an environmental impact statement done on them. And this federal government hadn't done it, but it, you know, Florida Defenders of the Environment had done one and showed adverse environmental impacts. And so that's why the judge stopped it. You know, our environmental impact statement probably wasn't considered adequate, but it was enough to for what the Corps should have done. But it was adequate enough for that judge to say, get your act together, Army Corps of Engineers, and do this. Eventually, they did do it. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, they're good, solid people, and they're very qualified. They did it. They came back and they concluded the project is barely justifiable economically, absent doing the analysis on the environmental impacts. But in consideration of the environmental impacts, it doesn't make sense to move forward with completing the construction of this project. So the federal government just said, no, nope, we're done. And you know, then there was a whole period of time where we were kind of in limbo about what's going to happen next.
So the project was basically abandoned, stopped by a judge in the late 60s, early
1969, 70s. I believe it was.
69. And so, but the dam remained. So you'd think that when the project was stopped, they'd say, okay, well, the dam is no longer useful. We're no longer going to need it to navigate through a cross Florida barge canal. So let's take it down. But what happened instead, Jim?
Well, Florida kind of was a little bit flustered about, wow, we didn't expect this. You know, this is kind of, it was pre-environmental era for Florida. And, you know, the first really big significant environmental law in the books in Florida was in 1972 with the Water Resources Act. So all this kind of predated Florida's kind of consciousness as at the state level for environmental impacts. So they began looking at, the state began looking at what to do about this. And they commissioned some committees to take a look at what the options are. Well, the first attempt at that was a citizen group, a citizens advisory group, and it didn't end well. It was so contentious that they never really issued a final report because nobody could agree on it. There was the don't build it and then the do build it. And they were totally antagonistic to each other. And so it really was a total flop. So that was succeeded by another effort that was brought about by Tallahassee. And there was a thought that that a study should be done to take a look at this. And so the state legislature appropriated, I think it was $900,000 to do a rather comprehensive study of three different options for the river. There was one that was don't do anything at all, just leave it the way it is. There was another one that was called, I don't remember now, but basically it was called partial restoration. Partial restoration alternative, in which just remove enough of the infrastructure that was built for the dam to reestablish a free-flowing river that will deliver all of the environmental benefits that the original free-flowing river was. So that was called partial restoration. Get the dam out. You don't have to take all of it out. You need a river channel and a floodplain. And then there was one that nobody liked called partial retention. Partial retention was just lower the water level behind the dam. Nobody liked that. There were really only two sides to this argument. The people who liked fishing for bass in the reservoir and in their boats and wanted to leave it the way it was, and those people who were, you know, concerned about the environment and also, you know, other recreation activities on the river, who said, you know, let's take the dam out. And so both sides agreed partial retention was not the course to go, and then they devolved to the other two options that really were polar opposites of each other.
And so what ended up winning out is really nothing happened. The dam has remained as is for the past 50 plus years. Is that correct?
Well, the state made a a decision. After those studies were done, that were authorized by the state legislature, which I thought was a very wise move on the part of the state legislature, the reports were made, and there was a general consensus that partial restoration was the right way to go. And so Governor Lawton Childs at that time ordered his state agencies to begin working collaboratively with the St. Johns River Water Management District to get the partial restoration alternative moving, doing the planning, the permitting, and then ultimately, you know, the engineering and work in the field to make it happen. So and that was in 95 that Governor Childs gave the go ahead on that. And then 1997, what then became the Florida Department of Environmental Protection from its precursor agency, Florida Department of Environmental Resources, or whatever it was called back then in the 90s. The permit application was made in 1997. The Water Management District needs to do a lot of due diligence in consideration of complex permits like this. This is nothing they had seen before, quite a bit different. So it took them about a couple of years to really, you know, do their due diligence on what the impacts would be from the construction and whatnot. And unfortunately, coincidentally in time, we were beginning to see an emergence of what we call blue-green algae occurring in the St. Johns River. These are not really algae, they're cyanobacteria, but be that as it may, they are exacerbated by nutrients in the water. And there was a concern that during the time that the work to remove the dam was going on, there would be a temporary flux of nutrients coming out from organic sediments behind the dam that had built up that would flush out, go down the river, and possibly exacerbate those blue-green algae blooms in the St. Johns River. And so the district said, well, state of Florida, there's two things we can do here. We can deny your permit application, or we can put it in what's called abeyance, put it on the shelf, as it were, while we finish the studies that we need to do to see if it really will be a problem to when the dam the river is restored to a free flowing condition. The Water Management District did their due diligence very well. They went ahead with lots of studies. And they were, some of them were very big, comprehensive studies. The district really wanted to know everything about this. And a lot of great reports were generated at that time. And it took a while. It took till a report was published in 2016. You're going to say, wow, that is a long time.
Yeah.
1997 to 2016. Basically, the report came out in 2016 and said, we can do it. It can be done. It can be managed without exacerbating these blue-green algae blooms in the St. Johns River. And so that was at a time, well, we didn't exactly have the right leadership at the top.
We didn't have an environmentally friendly governor at the top at the time.
We unfortunately didn't have the sympathies in the governor's office at that time.
Right.
And this is politically, very politically divisive.
Right.
It is very politically divisive.
Along with 20 plus thousand acres of forest, 20 springs were also drowned along the Ocklawaha River. And for listeners who may not know this, Florida has the largest and highest concentration of freshwater springs in the world. And it's known for that. How they're not part of a national park is beyond me, but that's a whole other conversation. But so these 20 springs have the potential to reemerge, as we well know, because the infrastructure for the springs below ground, the water flow is still there. And we know this because of the drawdowns that are done in the river. Every few years, the Army Corps of Engineers brings down the water levels and some of these springs reemerge. So we know that the springs are still alive and we can restore potentially up to 20 springs if this dam were taken down. So here we are, 2022, 50 plus years after that dam was built. And the dam remains, the forest around it remains drowned, the springs remain drowned, The dam serves absolutely no purpose for any sort of economic reasons other than maybe to create a reservoir for bass fishermen. But yet there is still reluctance. What's the status of the fight right now, Jim? What's going on with that?
Well, just a few years back, Oscar, Florida Defenders of the Environment have been going at this for years and years, but I came to the realization shortly after I started working for FDE in 2016, about a couple of years later, when I told my executive committee that, you know, we need more horsepower. we need more people on this, and we can't afford it with our budgets. What if we formed a partnership to do this with other environmental organizations in the state? And I started reaching out to partners that I was fairly confident would stand with us. And sure enough, they did. Organizations like Florida Wildlife Federation and 1,000 Friends of Florida and several others, even Sierra Club Florida. I wrote a letter to Governor-elect DeSantis, congratulating him on his win before he took office, and giving him the heads up about the situation and how he could push this forward, and it would be a great thing for Florida. And then shortly thereafter, we continued to build that coalition to the point where we got a lot of partners, not just five, but, you know, a lot. I think by the time we got to our next letter, we had maybe somewhere on the order of 35 or so. Wow. And I wrote another letter to the governor after he was the governor and sworn in, and saying all these organizations support restoration of the river. Every governor, Lawton Childs, all the way through Jeb Bush and Charlie Crist, all supported restoration of the river. It's not a politically divisive issue in the state of Florida. I'm sure you'll agree that this is the right thing to do. That was kind of the gist of it. It was, you know, it was intended to inform him the history if he wasn't aware of it. And so that letter went out, and that one was the, when that letter went out with that many names on it, we started getting a lot of interest from other organizations, and somebody who I think, you know, jumped in and said, I want to help. And that was Margaret Spontak, who jumped in. And oh, I was so pleased to see her back in the game again. She had been in the game earlier, but she had to take a little time out for a while because she was working for an employer who it might have been incompatible for her to be doing the environmental work while she was working for that employer. But when she resigned that position, she came back and she took over and she chaired what ultimately became the Free the Ocklawaha River Coalition for Everyone, or the FORCE Coalition. And she's done a great job.
I hope to get Margaret Spontak on this podcast soon. We can talk to her a little bit more about that. And so is there hope, Jim, that this dam might actually be able to come down in the next few years and the Ocklawaha River gets restored?
I think so. I think so. Even regardless of who's governor after the next general election, you know, Charlie Crist has already come out saying, if I'm elected governor, I'm going to do this. You know, he wrote, there's in a couple of different papers, an op-ed about this is the right thing for it. And basically said, if I don't win, I recommend to Governor DeSantis that he follow through with this because it's the right thing to do for. So it was not a really politically divisive style of writing in that particular op-ed. It was just, this is good for Florida. Well, everybody agrees in the past that this is what should be done in terms of majority, the vast majority of the people. And this is supported by a survey that was done by the Water Management District not long ago, a couple of years back, not even a couple of years, where they surveyed people, something like, I think they got like something like 10,000 responses to this survey that overwhelmingly was supported restoration of the river, free-flowing river.
Another crazy fact out there, which I found out while we were researching for our documentary, The Fellowship of the Springs, was that the dam is past its intended lifespan. The dam is aging and had a lifespan of, I don't know, 40 or 50 years. We're now way past the 50-year mark. And the dam is deteriorating. Talk to me about that. Does that factor in?
That's a very serious parallel issue on this whole thing. The dam, of course, doesn't generate the revenue it would have if there had been a cross Florida barge canal. And so there are sources of funding to keep up the maintenance, but it's not happening. It hasn't been happening. The dam has been undergoing progressive deterioration, as all dams do. And this particular dam is getting to be a little bit too hazardous. Dams are rated on their hazard potential, from a low hazard to moderate to high hazard. This particular dam is rated as a high hazard dam because if it were to experience a catastrophic collapse, and I'll explain how that might happen, that it could actually lead to loss of life. Not just property damage, loss of life. A significant hazard is just loss of property. High hazard is loss of property and loss of life. And why this particular dam is particularly vulnerable is because it's built of sand. And you know how permeable sand is.
Right.
Sand allows water to flow through it very easily. And if some of the barriers to flow that are built underneath the dam were to breach through corrosion or other processes, and water starts seeping through them, it's going to flow through porous flow first, very slowly, but eventually it's going to speed up as it erodes sand all the way through the dam and discharges it downstream. And so the little seep gets bigger and bigger and bigger, right, and bigger and bigger. Pretty soon you got a whooshing flow of water through there, and when you don't know it's happening, it can't be seen, it's invisible. And then you have a catastrophic collapse of the dam where, boom, the thing just collapses and empties out in a matter of hours after it happened. And that's the kind of failure that has happened in other dams in the country that were, or they didn't know about the hazard, or they didn't do the right maintenance, or whatever the reasons. And right now, the state of Florida is, see how generous I can be here, not living up to due diligence in assessing the risk of failure, of a catastrophic failure. They know there are portions of the dam that they can't inspect because they're clogged with vegetation behind the dam, a problem that's been known for years and was supposed to be fixed a long time ago, but wasn't, for whatever reasons. I don't know what they are, but they should have fixed it. And so they haven't been able to get down and look to see what the condition of some of those underwater barriers are to potential for failure. So that at very least, the state should be doing that. And of course the state knows about that. They did issue a series of reports in March of this year that said, yeah, we better be looking at that. But I'm not aware that they've done anything yet about it.
So to recap, the Cross Florida Barge Canal idea was abandoned in the 1960s, but before it was abandoned, this dam was built. But just because the idea was abandoned, the dam did not get taken down. The dam remained, even though it served no economic purpose whatsoever, or environmental, or any purpose whatsoever, other than blocking a river and 20 springs and drowning 20,000 acres of forest and 20 springs along it. And here we are 50 years later, the dam is past its intended lifespan. Actions have tried to be taken to have the dam removed in a systematic and responsible way. And yet the state of Florida, for some reason, cannot bring itself to just remove the dam and just let the water flow. After 50 years, after the dam is getting old, it's presenting a safety hazard to the communities around it. And so right now we have such, in my opinion, such incredible environmental dysfunction in Florida among our leaders. that we cannot bring ourselves to remove a dam that serves no purpose other than destroying nature and is a hazard to the communities around it. And yet here we are still unable to do anything about it. I mean, it's a little scary to think that if we can't do that, take that simple step to restore the Ocklawaha River, what does that tell you about the rest of our environmental challenges in Florida? Because we have many of them. And so I think it's so important for people like you and the work you're doing to keep bringing attention to issues like this, Jim, because without you and without the work you're doing, a lot of people wouldn't even know this problem exists, and they wouldn't know that it has a simple solution.
It does.
So what does your gut tell you about the future? Is there hope? I mean, I know you kind of recapped that just a minute ago, but in a nutshell, what do you say?
Well, if there wasn't hope, I suppose we wouldn't be wasting our time. There is hope, Oscar. And, in terms of, you talked about, you know, serving no economic purpose, it serves a tiny little recreational purpose for people who like to fish there. But studies have been done by economists, not me, not a geologist, by economists who've looked at this more than once, and including relatively recently, that have said, this is good for Florida economically. And it's so good that it'll pay back the costs to restore the river in just a few years after it's built. Yeah.
Wow. So
it's not even a cost issue.
It's not even a cost issue. So independent economists are saying that if you remove that dam, the economic perks will quickly outweigh any financial burdens of it. And from what I understand, from what I remember, removing that dam would not cost a lot of money. I think it's a tiny drop in the bucket, something like $30 to $35 million to remove that dam, which is really not a lot of money in the state of Florida's budget. So, just to recap with other people, Jim Gross is a scientist by trade, although he's the executive director of Florida Defenders of the Environment. He's a geologist. He used to work for the St. John's River Water Management District and I believe other water management districts and
South Florida Water Management District
and South Florida Water Management District. So you've gotten your fair share of governmental experience on these issues. So you speak from a point, in my opinion, from a point of authority about this, and you know what you're talking about. And I would say that that the work you're doing, again, is something that everybody should appreciate, because although you're outgunned, outmanned, out-resourced by very heavy hitters, the cause that you represent is a noble one. And it's something that I think a lot of people are ready to get behind. So my last question, Jim, is how can people get involved in these issues and help support Florida's environment?
Support your environmental organizations. We're on the cutting edge of advocacy for protecting Florida's environment, our water resources. Support Florida Defenders of the Environment. Support all the environmental organizations in Florida. And talk to your elected officials and tell them what you want to see done, specifically about the Ocklawaha River.
Excellent. Jim, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. It's been a real pleasure, and I hope we can talk again soon.
Thank you, Oscar. My pleasure.
This episode of the Nature of Florida podcast was brought to you in part by the Fellburn Foundation, the Fish and Wildlife Foundation of Florida, and Explica Media. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to subscribe on our website, The Nature of Florida with Oscar Corral.buzzsprout.com. That's The Nature of Florida with Oscar Corral.buzzsprout.com. Or find us on your favorite platform and follow us on Facebook and Instagram.